From time to time, especially during the summer, my wife and I grab a quick dinner at one of our local neighborhood restaurants. When we don't have patience for the whole waiter and menu thing, we just take a couple of seats at the bar rather than the main dining area, and we can get in and out in less than an hour. If we come early, there are few people at the counter. Often it's just the two of us and the bartender. We like it that way. A temporary asylum of privacy and tranquility within a turbulent urban madhouse. Don't get me wrong, I like people too. I wouldn't want to live in, say, Idaho. But sometimes, not talking to people on a warm summer evening is also nice. And there's a certain New York etiquette at the bar. Locals know that you're sitting there because you kind of want to be left alone. It's one of the attractions of the bar area. And New York bartenders seem to always know precisely when to say something to you and when to just leave you be. So one evening this summer, Allison and I, my wife, walk into our neighborhood restaurant and sit down at the bar at one of our local hangouts. There were several people there already, so we grab the two corner seats. And I noticed that a couple next to us, call them Ted and Mary. From the moment we sat down, looked at us in a non-New York kind of way. It was much too friendly. Way too empathetic. Overly curious. And excessively self-deferential for any self-respecting New Yorker. Now, if you're in the public eye long enough, you get some of this as a matter of course. A lot of people know you. They can't always place precisely how they recognize you. I can see their minds churning, trying to figure it out. But there's always some kind of faint recognition on their face, in their eyes, actually. And I, at least, often detect it. When I was younger, I would often be confused with that actor on crossing Delancey Street. You know, the pickle guy, Peter Rieger. From time to time, people would ask me for autographs. And I would sign, I asked him, what's your name? I signed to my friend from Peter Rieger, and they would be in seventh heaven. Well, I'm just kidding about that, but not about Peter Rieger. I came to develop a sixth sense for the once over. Even abroad, even in London, I could sense that people were looking at me, and I would tell Allison, someone is looking at me here. And my wife would laugh and laugh, teasing me that I was projecting Beyonce onto my D-level celebrity status. She stopped laughing at me, at least about this kind of thing, when we were at a restaurant several years ago with a couple of friends in Cold Spring, of all places, and I said, I sent someone looking at me. Of course, they all laughed and laughed at my swollen head until 5 minutes later, a woman approached me and asked, you're Rabbi Hirsch, right? You did my bat mitzvah 20 years ago. Our friend's stunned expression is pleasantly and permanently implanted in my mind. But these people, call them Ted and Mary, they seem different. They didn't seem like congregants or past congregants or Jewish media consumers. They didn't seem Jewish to me at all, and I have a sixth sense for that too. Finally, caller Mary, who was sitting right next to me, gathers the nerve to initiate a conversation. Now, you know how authentic New Yorkers instinctively pick up verbal and nonverbal cues of leave me alone? That wasn't Mary. Another hint that she wasn't from our neck of the woods. Anyway, we started chit-chatting. What could we do? You know, we felt we were representing all of New York. We didn't want this couple to return home bad-mouthing all of us. Turns out, they were from Idaho. And they were in New York for the month accompanying their daughter, who was a dancer and was invited to participate in a prestigious summer program. Idaho. They sought advice about New York, where to go, what to see, all standard stuff. I asked about life in Idaho since, alas, I don't anticipate ever going. They told us about the great American outdoors. They described hunting and fishing, pristine rivers, clean, crisp, fresh air, all quite intimidating to me. They mentioned that practically everyone they know in Idaho is devoutly religious. They pray daily and attend church weekly. And they added, we're Trump supporters. Everyone is where we come from. Mary asked Allison what she did. And the response, New York attorney, didn't seem to raise any suspicious connections in their mind. Predictably, Mary then asked me what I do. I hesitated for an instant because I was there for a quick beer and burger. And for one brief moment, I thought to respond, I'm an attorney too, which is true. But I said, I'm a rabbi. You know what that is, right? I'm not sure that Ted and Mary really knew what that was. But I followed up with, have you ever met Jewish people? They kind of did, but not really. Mary made the motion for the side curls that she saw on television or maybe on the street corner since she arrived. And I explained to her that most Jews are not that way. Ted mentioned that he thought that he had gone to school back in the day with somebody Jewish. But I assumed that this couple had never had the kind of conversation with any Jew that they were obviously about to have with me. I explained that a rabbi is like their evangelical minister, only Jewish. I can't tell you the effect that had on Mary. She looked at me as if I was priestly royalty. For a split second, I thought to myself, how wonderful and ego-affirming it would be to shepherd a flock of true believers like them. But I came to my senses when Mary looked at my half-emptied beer glass and asked with trepidation, are you allowed to drink beer? I immediately thought of the biblical Nazarites who voluntarily took upon themselves the obligation to avoid alcohol consumption among other restrictions. The rabbis didn't like the Nazarites, which is why we don't have Nazarites today. The sages thought they were too pious, too extreme, and too self-indulgent with all their religious prohibitions. The Talmud stated, life is hard enough as it is. Why burden yourself with additional obligations that are not required? Increasingly, I was taken with Mary. How not? For someone who gives you that kind of deference, respect, admiration, even reverence, not for anything you've done, but just because of what you represent, it's a lot of pressure. Mary's sincerity and authenticity, her politeness, her generous countenance really touched me. That's the thing about personal experiences and relationships. It's one thing to picture in your mind an evangelical, Trump-supporting, hunting and fishing couple from Idaho. It's an entirely different matter. To have actually met these delightful, gracious, courteous, respectful, inquisitive, intelligent, and engaging people who were spending a month in the big city at considerable expense to grant their teenage daughter her life's dreams. We spoke for about 30 minutes. From Ted and Mary's perspective, I think they probably could have spent another hour there at the bar, but we really had to go. And as we began to bid them farewell, Mary said to me, "Before you leave, could you say something to me?" I was a bit baffled by that because we had spoken for a long time. And I had said many things to her. So the best I could come up with was, "I wish the two of you much enjoyment in New York City, and I hope that you remember this time with us for good." That's not bad, right? On the spur of the moment, after a glass of beer? I thought they might return to Idaho and tell their friends that, contrary to what they might have heard, New Yorkers are normal and even friendly, and you can run into Jews on every street corner and at every restaurant, and they're not so bad either. But I could see Mary's disappointment written all over her face. It was almost like a spiritual letdown for her. She explained, "No, I wanted you to bless me." Far from having any mixed feelings about Jews, she equated me with her own spiritual leader and wanted me to consecrate the time that we shared together. She saw me as a fellow traveler in faith. I did bless her, not by what we call the laying of hands, but I paraphrased a number of my favorite teachings from Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the sages in the Talmud, and I said to her, "May you be tolerant of all people. Assume the best in them, judge them favorably, giving them benefit of the doubt. Everyone is in pain. Everyone is struggling with something. Pursue peace." And then Ted and Mary, Mary especially, looked content, satisfied, and even fulfilled. I think I made an impression on our guests from Idaho. I think they'll remember the time we spent together at the bar of a New York City burger joint. But they likely left a more lasting impression on me than I on them. First, they reminded me of the basic truth of our tradition, that a wise person learns from everyone. Through others, we come to know ourselves better. When we enter a relationship, a real face-to-face encounter, we develop insight, wisdom, and compassion that a book, a newspaper, or a computer screen obscure. Moral awareness develops most meaningfully, not in a philosophy or ethics class, but through person-to-person interaction, listening, observing, doing, and being done to. A screen is better than nothing. But only by zooming into another soul, looking into their eyes, removing the barriers and the filters, can we begin to understand their struggles, their dreams, and their ambitions. And we come to realize that we're not so different. Their hopes are our hopes. Their fears are our fears. We learn to empathize more and judge less. Al tadin et chavercha ad shetagia limkomo. Do not judge another person until you have been in his place, Hillel taught. If we can skip over the parts of the newspapers that we don't want to read, stop the video wherever we want, mute what we don't want to hear, let the algorithms determine who and what we see, we deprive ourselves of the tools of self-awareness and self-understanding. Second, relationships teach us how to live in community. Ted and Mary, rural, lovers of the great American outdoors on what we on the coasts call flyover country, evangelical, Trump supporting, everything I'm not. They reminded me to be careful about the political stereotypes we neatly and casually apply to others. Americans are so angry now, so siloed, so polarized, so self-absorbed in their intense pursuit of victimization and grievance, that we often neglect the distinction between, I disagree with you, and you are so wrong as to pose a mortal threat to my way of life. There is space between, I think you're mistaken, and you are a morally repugnant moron. It's within that space that democracy lives and free societies thrive. Some people really are a threat to our way of life, and some people really are morally repugnant morons. But most Americans are not. We make caricatures out of people by shallowly assigning to them attributes we ignorantly assume to be those of their group, their race, sex, zip code, religion, education, political affiliation, occupation. Franz Kafka wrote this aphorism: a cage when in search of a bird. That's so Kafkaesque. A cage when in search of a bird. Avoid the temptation to take the cage you already constructed, often designed by self-interested others, in search of those who fit neatly into the enclosure that you fashioned for them. The benefit of a cage in search of a bird is simplification. I don't need to understand all the complexities bothering you. I don't need to look deeper. Everyone fits the same size and fits the same cage because it can't be altered. I already built it. It's one size fits all. I'm not looking to discover the magnificent diversity of God's creation and adjust my views to what is actually out there. I'm looking to shape whatever I find into my pre-existing presumptions. And then we ourselves become encaged, imprisoned behind the narrow bars of our shrunken worldview. Reality is much more complex, and people are much more complicated. Every human being is filled with both the best and the worst of qualities, whether diplomat or not, affluent or not, religious, secular, coastal, urban, rural, white collar, blue collar, liberal, conservative, and whatever skin color under the sun. We are all made of the same stuff, and we struggle with the same drives: the need for health, safety, respect, dignity, fulfillment. Everyone contends with mortality, how to make my brief life count for something useful. Everyone needs friendship, companionship, belonging, affirmation, to love and be loved. Everyone needs to find some order amidst the randomness and chaos of existence. It is what religion is designed to do. But we have so distanced ourselves from God, from the synagogue, Jewish tradition, daily practice and religious discipline, that we have opened a yawning chasm of yearning that must be filled with something else because, like nature, human nature abhors a vacuum. Beware of filling that void with politics. As you know, I'm very concerned and engaged in the political process. I speak about it often, and our synagogue acts upon this conviction daily. Political competition is critical, and we must be active because politics is the way we determine policies in this country, and policies reflect collective moral values. No religion worth its weight in salt is concerned about the vulnerable and downtrodden, but unconcerned with and uninvolved in the policies that made those people vulnerable and downtrodden in the first place. But politics cannot replace religion. Party cannot replace Torah. And presidents are not messiahs. Whether to fill the void for those who no longer believe in messiahs or to justify divine intervention for those who do. Third, Ted and Mary's faith uplifted me. That's the effect of interacting with people whose faith beats strong within them. They give you hope. Whether you yourself believe in anything, when you're in the presence of the faithful, they help us affirm life. It's not that they're unaware of the pain and the disappointments, the trials, the tragedies, travails, tribulations, and turbulence that visit every person. It is that despite this knowledge, they insist that life has meaning and purpose. Do not be afraid of life. There is hope for the human creature. Faith is hope, not established fact. It is a belief, not objective truth. Like everything in human affairs, religious faith can be taken to extremes. And then it becomes idolatrous, as monstrous and dangerous as any secular or political extreme. But authentically faithful people look for the good in others. They seek peace and understanding. They believe in the moral life. And morality is intuitive and emotional. It is not scientific and objective. Morality is a human construct that cannot be discovered in a lab. Vayara Elohim et kol asher asa v'hine tov me'od. And God saw all that God had created, and behold, it was very good. Goodness is an emotion. Science doesn't ask, is this good? Is this just? Does this feel right? The question for science is this correct or incorrect? Morality, the very soul of religion, is a feeling, the result of friendship and companionship, a fellowship with other human beings. This then leads to all the humanitarian values first developed by the religious thinkers of antiquity and expanded upon by modern philosophers. Even secular humanism is religious in spirit because it is not provable. It requires a leap of faith in human worth by virtue of human specialness, what religious people call in God's image. Vayipach be'apiv nishmat chayim, vayehi ha'adam nefesh chaya. And God breathed into it the breath of life, and the human became a living being. And so as we begin 5784, I take this opportunity to bless you with these words. paraphrasing the ethics of our sages. May your fellowship with human beings lead you away from violence, exploitation, theft, cruelty, torture, injustice, and war. May you lead a life of compassion, a life of gentleness, kindness, truth, honor, empathy, dignity, loyalty, generosity, humility, and mercy. Do the right thing without expectation of reward. The reward of a good deed is the deed. May you cherish and seek human freedom, justice, and righteousness. May you be tolerant of all people, assuming the best in them, judging them favorably, and giving them the benefit of the doubt. Everyone is in pain. Everyone is struggling with something. And may you be like the disciples of Aaron, loving peace and pursuing it, loving all human beings and bringing them closer to Torah.